This morning, welcome. We have many visitors from across the state, and it is good to have you all here to represent your communities. And thank you for braving the snow this morning. We have a couple of procedures to talk about. We are not going to be taking any votes today. We will take votes in the Senate Tax Committee on local sales tax bills tomorrow. Amendments can be offered at that time. For members that are here, this is informational. If you want to talk more with the local communities represented here, I would ask you to do that outside of these proceedings, because we are going to hear from seven communities between now and 10 o'clock. The House Tax Committee, I understand, convenes immediately thereafter. So we will be finished here at 10 o'clock. That gives us 15 minutes per bill, and we are going to stick to 15 minutes per bill. We are going to begin with Senator Newman and Representative Szymanski from Hutchinson, and then we are going to move to Senator Koch and Representative Anderson from Clearwater, and then we will take up Senator Miller and Representative David's bill to accommodate their schedules as well. We've wanted to make sure that all the folks from the communities are here before we take them up, so that's our first order of business, those three communities. So if we could, we would like to hear Senate File 276, House File 377, Senator Newman, Representative Szymanski, and the mayor and city engineer for Hutchinson. Senator Newman, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Scott Newman. I'm a senator from District 18 and one of the or the Senate author for Senate File 276, which is a bill regarding a local option sales tax for the city of Hutchinson. And so the members of the committee know this is a matter that was on the ballot last November, and the citizens in Hutchinson have already voted on it and approved it, and we are now bringing this bill forward after the fact. Madam Chair, just so that I understand, you've indicated this is an informational hearing only, and this matter will be taken up by the Tax Committee tomorrow morning. What is the procedure this morning? I mean, are we going to move to lay this over, or are we just taking up tomorrow morning? If you could explain that, please.
Yes, Senator Newman, we will take up all of these bills tomorrow during the hearing, and members can offer amendments at that time. And we can have further discussion as if necessary. But because we are two committees, we would have to operate separately on every amendment, which could be complicated. So we've just decided to take all the information to accommodate all the local elected officials and their visit just for one day. Hopefully we can get all this done. So then tomorrow we can take up the actual business of laying over bills or acting on bills and amendments as necessary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. With that, I would yield to Representative Szymanski.
Thank you. Representative Szymanski, welcome to the Tax Committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Ron Szymanski, State Representative for District 18A, and with me this morning are Mayor Steve Cook of Hutchinson and City Engineer Kent Exner from the City of Hutchinson. They will be presenting information on the House File 377. Madam Chair, there is a technical amendment. Will that be presented here today on the House File 377, or should we hold that for tomorrow?
Mr. Patrick advises that it will be presented in your committee tomorrow, in the House committee tomorrow.
Thank you, Madam
Friday,
Chair.
Excuse me, Friday.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as Senator Newman has already stated, the referendum for House File 377, the local option sales tax for the city of Hutchinson, was voted on November 2nd, 2010, and had broad support in the city of Hutchinson. And I would at this time like to ask Mayor Cook and Mr. Exner to present their information on House File 377.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, welcome to the committee. Good morning.
Madam Chair. This is really a bill about jobs. Imagine a city with a population of about 14,000 people, one local industry losing 12,000 or 1,200 jobs, and unemployment over 13%, nearing 12% in the county and neighboring counties as well. And that's what Hutchinson, McLeod County, and the neighboring counties faced in 2009. As a result, attracting new jobs to replace those is just as important for us as what we hear, you know, it is for the legislature and the governor. However, Hutchinson has a unique problem that threatens our ability to attract new jobs and maintain existing jobs that we already have. Now, this is really taken on a new twist with the announcement yesterday where Hutchinson Technology is shifting out another 600 jobs from the Hutchinson area. So that's why we're asking for authorization to implement the local half-cent sales tax that, again, 61% of our local voters approved last November. The problem is that the city of Hutchinson built a new water plant in 2007. It came online and expanded our wastewater plant. And again, that was completed in 2008. Both were done to improve quality and then also support our local industries, future growth of the community, and meet tightening state and federal regulations. Both were done with input from our users, as well as some significant analysis to see what would really be the best method to meet the issues that we faced. However, shortly after that, then late 2008, 2009, the recession really took hold. We had significant job losses, significant long-term changes in our local industries, and this has severely reduced the usage on the water and wastewater plants. Industries usage is down 50%, and residential use is down about 30%. As you know, this impacts revenues then that help to pay the debt as well as the operating expenses of the plants. And then the announcement yesterday just adds to that even more. We can see another additional 10% reduction in usage overall, so very significant in light of the other reductions. In 2009, the city took aggressive action and it restructured our debt. We've cut operating expenses by $1 million and reduced employees in this departments. We've shifted some of our infrastructure needs that normally would be paid out of these funds to our bonding, which then takes away our ability to do some of the street improvement projects that we need to do. We've also drawn down reserves to levels that are really the minimum levels from a state or bonding requirements. So we've really tried to do everything that we could do. In addition, we raised utility rates. That was part of the plan, you know, to help pay for these improvements. But because of some of the shortfalls, we're already above and beyond what was planned. We raised rates again 5% in 2011. And right now, our rates are among the highest in the state for comparable cities. And that's really the problem, because now, you know, we're afraid that we're going to be uncompetitive to attract new jobs and hurt our ability to maintain the jobs that we already have. So we started looking at alternative options, and really the best option to help us stabilize rates, which is all about the jobs part of it, and keeping us competitive. And the local option sales tax was really the best option to do that. Again, it's a different revenue source. A lot of people come to Hutchinson to work and shop. About 50% of the employees from Hutch Technology and 3M or other large manufacturer come from outside the city. So this is a fair and reasonable method to raise some additional revenues. Our annual debt payment is about $3 million a year. The sales tax would raise between $800,000 to $1 million. So it doesn't cover everything. It's just a part of the solution. And finally, the sales tax would sunset after 18 years, which is based on the current debt schedule for the plants. So, you know, if we're able to pay it off sooner, we'll do that. But 18 years is the maximum. To close the water, wastewater treatment, you know, they're basic services for any community, and they're very vital to support local industries and jobs. And it's been suggested that we've looked at some other state programs. We did actually try for a bond or a state grant with the wastewater plant when that was being built, as well as a federal grant, but we were unsuccessful with that. And really, in reality, the sales tax is going to raise about $14 to $18 million over its life. I don't think the state program is really going to be able to help us raise that type of revenue. However, with the announcements that we had yesterday, we might have to look at some of those again. But still, that would be above and beyond what the sales tax need is. So this is a unique and very serious situation. It's not just a problem for Hutchinson. It's really a regional problem. And that's why we think the sales tax is fair and reasonable. So we just ask for authorization to implement the sales tax that the voters already have approved, help us stabilize rates, and help us to attract new jobs and keep the jobs we already have. So,
thank you, Mr. Mayor. You estimated $800,000 to $1 million. Does that comprise both types of taxes that you're proposing here?
Yeah, sales and use. Yes, it is.
Okay.
And that came from the Department of Revenue sales tax data. Just based on the strict 5% or half a percent, it would be about $1 million. But we wanted to be conservative because, again, some of the sales are outside of the community and don't get covered by the sales tax.
Thank you. Members, for your use in your packet is a handout that says local sales taxes, which show the currently existing general sales and use taxes. It continues on to the final page, which talks about that motor vehicle retail sales tax per vehicle that has been enacted in other communities as well, so you'll find that in your packet. I understand Representative Detmer has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and a question for the Mayor. You mentioned several hundred jobs that have left Hutch Technology. Has the company moved? Where are these jobs going?
The latest jobs are, Madam Chair and Representative Detmer, the latest jobs are being through a consolidation with their plant in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And it's a newer plant that really apparently is designed and set up better for the automated processes that they have. The Hutchinson plant would require some major modifications. We've had a good relationship with HTI and over the years, and we still do. We're still going to have about 600 jobs in Hutchinson with their headquarters being here, as well as some R&D and some other things. But, you know, they're trying to do what they need to do to stabilize the company. And hopefully in the future, if that can be done, there might be opportunities for jobs coming back to Hutchinson as well.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Kent Exner is here from the city of Hutchinson. He is the engineer. Do you have anything to add, Mr. Exner?
Just briefly, to reiterate what the mayor already mentioned, these plants were built in a time period where existing infrastructure at the plants was struggling. We were up against the capacity of those plants, and from the wastewater standpoint, we had to address tightening regulatory environmental restrictions. So back in the early 2000s, when these plants were being developed and the design process was started, there was a definite need at that point in time. So just want to reiterate that. There was no question about the feasibility and the viability of the plants when they were being developed.
Thank you. Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I just have a question on the motor vehicle. You know, I know I'm new here, but I see that other cities have done that. And I also serve on the Transportation Committee as the Vice Chair. And typically all the surcharges and taxes that we put on a motor vehicle go for a dedicated fund, you know, towards mm-hmm. roads and bridges. And I'm just wondering, this appears that this $20 fee is just going to make the cost of purchasing a vehicle a little bit more in your city. Is it? It's not designed, as far as the legislation is concerned, it's just going to go towards the debt reduction?
Yes, it is. Madam Chair and Senator Howell, the excess fee was really designed to make local car sales still competitive with neighboring communities. And I think that's why it was really instituted that way, instead of having a sales tax that would be 0.5% on $20,000 vehicle, for instance. So there's a way to minimize that impact, but also have a little bit of revenue in addition to help with this issue.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, could you tell me exactly how many dollars you project to get from the surcharge on the motor vehicles?
We did not look at that, Senator Howe.
Thank you. Thank you. Senator Newman or Representative Szymanski, a final comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was contacted by one constituent who wanted to speak in opposition to this bill. I don't know if she has come. Yes, she is here. And I have indicated to her, Madam Chair, that she was more than welcome to come to the committee and speak in opposition. Perhaps this would be a correct time for that.
Yep, you are welcome. Please join us at the table. Welcome, ma'am, and please introduce yourself and tell us who you represent.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and legislators. I am Joy Schmitz. I am a resident of Hutchinson, Minnesota, and I am coming before you to speak in opposition to this bill because I really want to speak to the fundamental of how when a tax, you know, we can talk about when a tax should be implemented, but who should pay for these city debts? Is this an appropriate way to raise fundings for these debts? And we're all affected constituents represented in the Hutchinson referendum vote. You know, when we talk about how cities are incorporated and why they're incorporated and why people choose to live there to help get services that they otherwise wouldn't get for themselves. That those services include, as we're talking about, water, sewer, police, fire. And by living in the city, those people are choosing to pay for those services. And people who don't want to pay for those services choose to live outside or do business outside of the city. That's how. So by implementing a sales tax, I believe it's going to be collecting money from people who are not choosing to pay for the service to pay for water and sewer of the city of Hutchinson. And so I want to talk about then the referendum and what does that represent. I believe this is an insufficient justification for the sales tax. That yes vote only represents 12% of those who voted in the House District 18A because only the city of Hutchinson residents were able to vote on it. Also, only 6% of constituents are represented in the Senate District 18. Even within the city of Hutchinson, there were a total of 7,621 ballots cast at that election. Only 2,742 people voted for the referendum. That's only 36% of the Hutchinson ballots. So you can see how many people abstained. I respectfully disagree with Senator Newman and Ron Szymanski that they felt obligated to bring forth these bills just because the referendum passed. So that is why we have a separation of powers, and that is why I'm coming to you to this committee, because I believe it is your, you know, your jobs, that's what you're here to do, is to evaluate whether this is an appropriate use of money. We have a government system in place to pay these bills. It's called the water meter. And it is a very fair and just way to pay for these services. It's based on use. I agree with some comments that were made earlier. You know, when you separate how something is paid, you know, so you're collecting a tax on vehicles and it's going to go to pay for water. I don't see the connection.
We are going to try to keep
In closing, fundamentally, I think it is wrong to take money from people to pay for a service that did not choose to purchase the service. There's always already a way in place to identify and collect the money for those services. And I realize I'm only 1% of that 40% no vote, but I'm asking you to consider the legitimacy of this legislation. By hearing the points I put forth, I urge you to stop it. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Did you have a question, Senator Limmer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for the mayor. Mayor, on the vehicle excise tax, $20 per vehicle, And I'm looking at my Senate research notes. There's another reference that the sales and use tax was approved by voter referendum, but did the sales and use tax, did that include the reference to the vehicle excise tax as well?
Yes, it did.
And then what could you tell me what the car dealers in that city, in your city, think about this?
We had no opposition, organized opposition to the sales tax. The Chamber of Commerce, we were actually here last year, you know, for this, and they provided a letter to the tax chairs at that time saying that while they didn't, their board did not have unanimous support, you know, at that time for the sales tax, they did unanimously agree that the public should have the right to vote on it. And as I said, when we had the referendum, there was no opposition from any of the local businesses.
Madam
there
Chair,
were questions.
Senator Lindner.
Madam Chair, Mayor, you said earlier no organized opposition, but was there any opposition to this?
Not that I'm aware of. We had a couple letters to the editor, as you might expect. There were some questions that were forwarded to the Chamber of Commerce, as well as our finance director and ourselves, but and I think even our legislators. Yeah. But we tried to explain those, and again, that was the end of it. So
and
I think.
Madam Chair, how many car dealers are in your city?
Probably six altogether, two larger ones and some more independent used car sales.
Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, what could you tell us how many cars, how many vehicles are sold in the city of Huntington?
Madam Chair, Senator Howe, I'm not familiar with that number. So
well.
I don't think it's a significant number, really, in the whole scope of this bill.
Right.
So.
Just follow up, Madam Chair. I just a comment on this. I think, you know, I don't think the $20 per vehicle is a huge thing, but I think, you know, we just heard in tax committee talking about the internet sales tax and in a discussion that there's no tax collected if you buy from a online retailer that doesn't have a physical presence in Minnesota. And I think, you know, this local option sales tax seems like a nice, easy way to get additional funds for the city, but I would also caution that it's going to drive more people to that internet, and you're going to cause more purchases where we're going to lose, the state's going to lose the revenue, the city's going to lose the revenue, the county's going to lose the revenue, everybody's going to lose out, and the local retailers that employ people are going to lose out. Because if you can't compete, most retailers are already at a competitive disadvantage with people that are buying from Amazon, and this is just going to make it harder. And I think when we look at the long-term impacts of this, you're going to continue to put people who have brick-and-mortar places in your communities at a competitive disadvantage. And at some point, they're not going to be able to survive.
Members, we do have to move on. We'll take one more question and Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I have two questions, but I'll start with this one. To the witnesses, you know, the citizen in opposition, what is your current sewer and water rates now per gallon, or however you want to choose to imply it, and then what would it be if this local option sales tax does not go through?
Right now, it's
Mayor Cook.
It's based on rates and volumes, of course. So for 7,500 gallons, it's about $95
a month
combined water and sewer. And again, when we had some surveying done of other communities, we're at the high end of that, of the other communities. This, if the sales tax is implemented, it will not reduce our rates. We're trying to just stabilize our rates and prevent any future rate increases. If we don't get this, you know, we're going to have to raise rates to help fund future improvements, just ongoing operation costs as chemicals go up and employee wages. I mean, this is 18-year issue, so there's going to be increases that are going to be necessary.
Did, Was there another question, or can we move on, do you think, Representative?
I will drop my other question, but I will ask it as a follow-on. Do you have an idea of what your rates will actually go up to if the sales tax is not implemented? Will it go from 95 to 105, 120 a month?
Yeah, we're looking at about a 5% increase per year.
Yeah.
So, and
were there other witnesses? We do honestly have many, many bills we have to hear. So, you have finished your witnesses? Representative?
Madam Chair, I believe that's all the witnesses.
Then the chair moves that Senate. Okay, we are going to just hold this over then. Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And we will now be moving on to Senate File 363, Senator Koch.
Senator Koch and Representative Anderson, if you see you. There he is.
There he
Good
is.
Morning, Representative Anderson. Mayor Monk is here. I met him this morning. And Ms. Wolthy, did I say that correctly? Ms. Wolthy, the City Administrator for Clearwater. Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Good morning, members.
Senator Cole.
Good morning. Nice to see the House members over here. Senate File 363 that you have before you deals with local option sales tax, but in fact, the City of Clearwater has already passed a referendum, and in fact, in 2007, the legislative body approved the sales tax for the City of Clearwater. At the time, as part of the resolution, there was some language, and it was included in the bill, and then it was removed as part of the final bill. And so we are looking, we're trying to reinstate the intention of the voters when they originally voted for the referendum in 2006. So I will turn it over to the mayor.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, senators, representatives. I feel somewhat guilty coming and taking valuable time up for just having a few words reinserted. And that's basically what it is. I think you have those in front of you. We would like to have those added. And I don't know if anyone has any questions. I or my wonderful city administrator would be happy to answer them.
Mayor Monk, I do have a question. You're expanding for the use of improvement of regional parks and bike trails. What was the original language that didn't include that? I mean, what did it say prior to the proposed change?
This is the way the referendum was, and those words were deleted from the final bill. Bicycle trails, walkways, parkland.
Madam Chair, may I interject also?
Ms. Wolfe.
Back in 2007, when the legislation was introduced, the use for regional trails, bike trails, parks, and everything was removed, from my understanding, because we did not have something referencing where we have adopted the projects that we are looking at using the money for. We failed to include the reference back to our capital improvement plan. So at this time, we are now putting in that the projects we're looking at doing in these areas is referenced back to documents adopted by the city back in 2006. And this is supported by our residents. We've held several public hearings in 2010, and they stressed that they really feel it's important to put this back in. We have projects that we've put on hold with budget cuts and LGA cuts, and we're just hoping to move forward in expanding our parks by putting this language back into the use.
Thank you. And Ms. Dalton, House Research may have some information to help us with that as well.
Madam Chair, members of both committees, my name is Pat Dalton with House Research. And as I was just discussing with Representative Lincheski, what happened in 2008 is that they were not going forward with any bills that had not identified specific projects. And at that time, the trails and walkways and things like that had not been tied to a specific plan. And so that language was removed, and only the two projects that had been specifically identified in testimony were included. Now what they're asking to do is to tie this back to the projects that had been identified in their 2006 city plan.
Thank you. And Ms. Wolte, then, these projects would be financed within the current funding available.
Yes, we're not asking to expand the tax. We're just asking to expand the use so that we can use the money we're already collecting for.
All right, Senator Koch.
No, Madam Chair, and that is based on the original 2006 plan adopted by the city. We just had not referenced that in the original bill, and so.
Thank you, Representative Conan.
Apparently not.
Okay. Other questions? Are there other folks here to testify in favor or in opposition to this proposal? Mr. Mayor or Representative Anderson, Senator Koch, final comments.
Well, Madam Chair, I just appreciate the opportunity to come and bring this before the body, and hopefully you'll be favored towards our city and just referencing back to what was originally the intent of the bill, and hopefully we can move them on to getting their projects completed.
Thank you. And Mr. Monk, or Mr. Mayor, you'll see that one or two words actually can be very controversial around here, and it looks like you've passed through the gauntlet pretty safely, so good for you. We will take this up again tomorrow in the Senate Tax Committee and on Friday in the House, and thank you all for being here.
Okay. Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. Senators, representatives.
Members, we will move on to Senate File 423 and House File 582. Senator Miller and Representative Davids on the Lanesboro local sales tax. With Senator Miller and Representative Davids are Thomas Dibing, City Council member, Bobby Vickerman, City Administrator Clerk, and Julie Keene, Chamber Executive Director. And folks, I hope I pronounced that correctly, so forgive me if I haven't. Senator Miller, would you like to begin?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and members. Senate File 423 relates to the City of Lanesboro authorizing a local sales and use tax. And basically, this was on the ballot on November 2nd, and the voters in the City of Lanesboro passed it with overwhelming support, and I will pass it on to these folks. Thank you for making the trip up here. I know the weather wasn't the greatest this morning, but they have the details.
Ms. Vickerman, would you like to begin? Or
Madam Chair, hello, I'm Julie Keeney, Director with the Lanesboro Area Chamber of Commerce. The Lanesboro Area Chamber supports the City of Lanesboro in implementing a local sales tax option. Lanesboro is a unique city with population of 788, and there's no commas in that number, 788. Our natural scenic beauty, bike trail, arts, and friendly atmosphere draw people not only from Minnesota but from around the world. Lanesboro has a regional significance as a tourist destination. Our tourist website has over 4 million web hits and 3 million page views annually. We easily double our population on weekends and can triple our population on special events. Estimated visitors to Fillmore County are 200,000 per year. Lanesboro faces numerous capital replacement challenges. The normal wear and tear on a city of our size would typically not cause the need for these repairs. However, due to the tremendous use of our streets, our city buildings, and park by the tourism industry, the need for repair and replacement has escalated. Property taxpayers have been burdened, and the local government is requesting a local sales tax to allow some of this burden to be passed on to visitors. The local sales tax would be used to promote economic development and the local infrastructure repair that's needed. The City of Lanesboro has worked extremely hard for many years to get local sales tax, and we appreciate your help in passing this bill. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you. Ms. Vickerman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The property tax percentages for the city are at a much higher rate than most of the area cities that surround us. They have increased mainly to keep the city operating as it has. By having downtown businesses, it has benefited the city overall for utilities and property taxes. However, the cost to maintain the city supersedes those benefits. Like most cities, Lanesboro has lost 22% of its LGA in the last 8 years. In the last 8 years, we've also cut two full-time positions and two part-time positions and have had wage freezes for 3 years. We're trying to maintain our budget as we can without increasing property taxes. The roads, park, and other city buildings are in need of repair and replacement due to the consistent tourism economy. Unfortunately, Lanesboro is too small to benefit from the street funding program, so many improvements in streets and roads must come from our own budget and bonding. The city's capital improvement plan has over $3.5 million worth of projects that were outlined for need of repair within the next 10 years. The most important project right now is the Lanesboro Dam, which some of you are well aware of and have visited. We are working on the process of getting that repaired. We have paid a local sales tax at neighboring cities for many years, and we have no problem helping with their infrastructure. We are asking for that same opportunity when they come to Lanesboro for the same activities and recreation. The local sales tax is vital for our city to continue to fund the areas that contribute to the tourism and help Lanesboro to continue to be the regionally significant tourism destination that's known to be. Thank you.
Thank you. And Councilman Dibbing, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members, I'm also the Houston County Assessor, and when I took assessment laws and practices, one of the first things that we learned was the history of property tax, and also included in that was the discussion of sales tax and income tax, and you need a good balance between those three things. If you kind of rely on one more than the other way, it kind of gets out of whack. And we've certainly seen with our tourism that we have in our area that we've been asking a little too much from the property tax from our constituents, and that's why we're asking for you to look at this bill seriously. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Davids?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. You have before you Senate File 423. You have each project that they're looking at laid out. The one I'd like to concentrate on just very briefly, as some of the testifiers mentioned here, is the Lanesboro High Hazard Dam. If you've been on the bonding committee, you've been down and you've seen the leaks and you've seen the water shooting out of where it's not supposed to be shooting out. And Lanesboro has really stepped up to the place here. This legislature appropriated $450,000 in last year's bonding bill, or was it 2 years ago? 2 years ago. In the bonding bill, and it's about a $1.2 million project. So some of these funds would go to that very necessary project, and of course the other ones are necessary here too, but I'm very concerned about that dam project, and we need to get that that one taken care of. So I just appreciate your support.
Thank you. Are there other folks here to testify in favor of or in opposition to the proposal in Lanesboro? Representative Davids, I have to say, it seems like a great opportunity to have the House Tax Chair and the Senate Tax Committee at the table, but I won't take the opportunity for some interesting conversation at this point. I'll have to do that offline. But there may be others that can't pass the opportunity, but it's good to have you here. Ms. Vickerman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to mention that the vote did pass by over 80% by the local voters. It was 300-71, and over 68% of our voters did vote. So we did have a very good turnout. And the other piece of that dam is that we do produce hydropower. So we do produce green energy from the hydro dam. We do obviously benefit from it, but so does the entire state, because that goes towards green credits for the entire state. I just wanted to mention that because it is a very important asset that is available for the entire state. So.
Madam Chair.
Representative Davids.
I hope this committee will support my dam project.
We will do our best, Representative Davids. It seems that there should be some good negotiating going on this project, though. There was a question. Is there a question from the House member?
I was just wondering,
Madam Chair and
Representative Davids.
Both.
We wanted you to look at page 24. That's where the dam is.
That's the dam.
Senator Miller.
Madam Chair and members, I would encourage everyone to, if they get a chance to visit the city of Lanesboro. As you can see from the brochure in front of you, it's a beautiful city. All of our southeastern Minnesota cities are beautiful. So our members are welcome anytime.
You're all great advocates for your community. Thank you for being here today. We are going to move on to Senate File 53 and House File 49. Thank you for joining us today. As I said, there will be votes on these bills tomorrow in the Tax Committee in the Senate and on Friday in the House. Senate File 53 and House File 49, Senator Hoffman, Representative Nornes from Fergus Falls, they have a sales and use tax authorization bill. With the mayor of Fergus Falls here, Hal Leland, Joellen Thacker from the community, and Daryl Sinstielen, I believe, is here to testify in opposition. Welcome to the committee. We will move on, I think, to Senator Dames and Representative Conan after this, Senate File 312 and House File 579. Mr. Mayor, or Senator Hoffman, would you like to begin?
Certainly.
Senator
Thank
Hoffman.
You. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Good morning. Just for point of reference, this is my first bill that I'm going to present today, so no red marks, please. Anyway, this bill passed by an overwhelming majority in the city of Fergus Falls. It's Senate File 53, and it authorizes Fergus Falls to impose a half-cent sales tax for building an ice arena and kind of a community center. And I'm not going to go any deeper in the weeds than that because I've got the experts with me, so I'm going to introduce Mayor Leland and Councilwoman Thacker, and they will speak in support of the bill.
Thank
go
you.
Ahead.
Thank
Mr.
you,
Leland,
Madam
nice
Chair,
to see you
members
again.
Of the committee. Thank you for your time. Hello, my name is Hal Leland, and I'm the mayor of the city of Fergus Falls. Mark Sievert, our city administrator, is here to answer any technical questions. He's a gentleman with the crutches. I'd like to call upon one of our council members, Joellen Thacker, to introduce some community members and supporters who are in attendance.
Joellen. Councilmember Thacker, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. And maybe I could just have the supporters from Fergus Falls just stand and maybe give a wave. We have Stan Sinstelin, a member of our city council, Jerry Ness, our school superintendent, Harold Stanislawski, our economic development director, Brad Howland, another member of our Economic Development Commission and a former city council member, Steve Plaza, our park and rec director, Pam Muxfeldt, the president of the Fergus Falls Hockey Association, Lisa Algren, who was co-chairman of the local fundraising committee, Dean Bjorgum, a member of our Hockey Association board, Gene Bowman, our Convention and Visitors Bureau director, Carolyn McCart, chairman of the local CVB board, Mark Helen, community member and vice president of Otter Power Company, which is headquartered in Fergus Falls, and Ryan Howard, a reporter from our local newspaper.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor.
Madam Chair, members, on behalf of the Fergus Falls community, I would ask that you approve our request to authorize the city of Fergus Falls to implement a 1/2 cent local option sales tax to pay for a new community arena. The city council has approved the construction of this new $8.6 million facility. The Fergus Falls School District is making an in-kind contribution of $1.6 million, which comes in the form of land and their existing chiller system. A local fundraising group has raised $3 million, leaving $4 million to be paid by the community. Either through a local option sales tax, obviously our preference, or property taxes. Last November, at the general election, our residents were given the opportunity to vote on a local option sales tax to pay for the new facility. An overwhelming majority of 72% voted yes. Please allow me to provide a few details on how a local option sales tax would be implemented. According to our calculations and based upon numbers provided by the Minnesota Department of Revenue, a 1/2 cent sales tax would generate sufficient revenue needed to pay off the debt for a new community arena in 4.5 years. The arena is the only project the sales tax would be used for. Once the debt is paid, state statutes require the tax to sunset or to stop. The city would not be able to propose another sales tax for at least 1 year, which would again require voter and legislative approval. The sales tax would only be applied to items currently taxed. Therefore, the tax would not affect purchases such as food, clothing, prescription medications, or farm equipment. State statutes allow a city to also implement a $20 surcharge on the sale of vehicles. However, the city council has chosen not to do so. By using the sales tax as a method of financing the arena project, not only the residents of Fergus Falls, but everyone shopping in town would help pay for the facility. While Fergus Falls is just shy of 14,000 residents, there is an estimated 20,000 people living within the boundaries of our school district.
Many of these families have, over the years, had children, grandchildren, participate in hockey, skating, and other community programs. And now I would turn the rest of the script over to Joellen Thacker.
Councilmember Thacker.
Why are we moving ahead with this project now? Our current facilities is a fairgrounds building that was retrofitted to become an ice arena. That was over 40 years ago and then had a life expectancy of 25 years. It's simply worn out. In 2006, we performed a condition assessment of the facility and identified almost $5 million of needed repairs and upgrades. That's just too much to spend on an old, substandard facility. Structural aspects of the facility are in poor condition. Pumps, pipes, and compressors are antiquated, almost beyond repair. The current arena has one regulation-sized sheet of ice, as well as a non-regulation-sized sheet in the satellite arena. Because of the low ceiling of the satellite arena, it can only be used for youth practices and not for games or for figure skating competition. The current facility is not in compliance with the American with Disabilities standards. Entryways, restrooms, and seating areas are not conducive to those with disabilities. Additionally, we have done our best to meet Title IX regulations, but this situation is less than ideal. Locker rooms can best be described as inadequate for space, lockers, and privacy. The current facility is located 3.5 miles from the school, and since kids are the main users of the facility, there are traffic and safety issues traveling back and forth. The new arena is being constructed on school district property, which will make it much safer for our children. Our building plans have repurposed our former high school facility. A major portion of the former structure is being remodeled for the arena's use. The project cost was lowered significantly when plans included using the existing high school buildings. What really made this project feasible for us was the work of the fundraising committee. They have generated over $3 million in private funding for the project. Even after meeting their goal, they will continue with their efforts to raise funds to make the facility accessible for non-ice users. Funds will be used to purchase items such as AstroTurf, tennis nets, batting cages, etc. Other uses could be for golf, soccer, or track when weather is not cooperative in the spring. Funds will also help provide funding for youth scholarships to participate in recreation programs. There are numerous advantages for having a new arena in Fergus Falls. For example, our Convention and Visitors Bureau estimates the new facility will annually pump as much as $400,000 into our local economy. Those dollars would come from hockey tournaments and camps, figure skating competitions, trade shows, and other events, events we cannot currently hold due to the size and condition of the existing facility. That revenue impacts our local restaurants, hotels, retail establishments, and gas stations. 30 full-time workers will be employed on site during the construction period. This project will also provide corresponding benefits to manufacturers, suppliers, vendors, and off-site businesses. The business community would be directly affected by the sales tax, yet they are optimistic that shoppers will stay in town. For example, the increase on a $100 purchase would only be 50 cents. They believe it is still cheaper to shop in town rather than drive to another community. Another reason why businesses are on board? They realize that a facility like this will benefit our community. It is another reason for families to stay and possibly another reason to draw more young families to our community.
Thank you. Representative Detmer has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And looking at your bill, House File 49, Section 1, Subsection 3, Line 118, I really like that language where you are terminating of taxes. The testifiers, do you have any idea how many years it's going to take you to complete this this project?
Madam Chair, Representative Detmer, yes, it'll be 4.5 years according to the figures that we've received from the taxation department and our calculations of revenues through the tax system as opposed to property taxes, which would require 20 years of amortization.
Thank you. Senator Limmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mayor, going back to line 118, and despite the fact that in bold letters it says termination of taxes, when would this tax terminate?
Madam Chair.
Mayor Limmer.
Senator Detmer. Limmer, I'm sorry. Do we have that answer to that question? Okay. Upon payment of the bonds within 4.5 years.
Well, Mayor and Madam Chair, I'm looking at the reading of this, and I'm not sure if I interpret this the same way. If I read lines 19 through 21, it says that the city, when the city determines that sufficient funds have been received from the taxes to finance the facility and prepay or retire at maturity, the principal, interest, and premium due on any bonds, including refunding bonds issued by Fergus Falls, any funds remaining may be placed in the general fund of the city of Fergus Falls. I guess I kind of look at that as once you get done with your project, you can now move this funding source to pay for other things.
Senator Limmer, I've heard that great minds think alike, and I asked that very question when I looked at this bill, mm-hmm. and Ms. Dalton is prepared to answer that question. We'll ask her to respond first, because I understand this is typical language for these bills. Is that right?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, yes, this is standard language, and it has to do with the fact that local sales taxes can only expire on a quarter, and there has to be at least 90 days' notice that it is going to expire, which means that they may collect slightly more than they actually need to pay the bonds. And so this is basically dealing with that little incremental amount that they have to collect extra because they have to finish on a calendar quarter.
So, Madam Chair, the city would be then officially saying that once they pay for the facility bonding, and if there's any timing left over in the quarter, then only that portion of the quarter could be used to the money could be used for perhaps another bond responsibility. And then at that time, this tax will turn off?
Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, that's correct. Basically, if there's any little increment left in that quarter, it goes into their general fund, and they can use it for whatever city purpose that they want at that point.
I know, Madam Chair, we get cities all the time coming in, and once a sales tax has been authorized and after the payments have been made in full, then they come here without public approval, and then they want to extend it. And that has happened in this building from time to time. And I just think that every time we have a bond or a local option sales tax, we should be specific for the purpose, and then when the purpose is done, the taxes are done.
Senator Limmer,
yes. I just wanted to add one thing.
Can you introduce yourself for the record,
State Representative
sir?
Bud Nornes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Of course, Falls. Representative Nornes. Yeah. I'm sorry.
Should have had a name tag. I'm not new here either, but in response to the question, I think the estimates of this as far as the 4.5 years and the total amount raised is based on 2009 revenue estimates. So it's only an estimate. That's why it has the 4.5 years is not a definite until the total bonds are repaid.
Senator Howell.
Madam Chair, I'm just wondering if staff or maybe someone could get back to me on that. I'm interested on the termination of taxes and how many or have we ever had a local option tax actually expire? When I ask that question, I mean, has there ever been a local how many local option sales tax have actually expired that haven't been either extended or replaced by some other local sales tax or some other project? And I because I see this in all the taxes are going to terminate, but I'm just wondering what history has shown us on this.
Senator Howe, the House staff rivals the Senate staff, and Ms. Dalton has an answer for you right now.
Fabulous.
Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, I believe that there's actually been two that have expired. I want to say Wilmer is one, and I can't remember what the second one
Winona.
Right on.
Senator Howe.
Senator Lincheski, or Representative Lincheski is saying Winona.
Winona.
I only remember that, Madam Chair, because Ms. Dalton used to say it's the two cities with the W. W. So I think it's Winona, right?
Senator Howell, there's your answer.
Well, and then
Senator Howell.
Follow up, Madam Chair. How many local option sales tax have we instituted?
Good question. Ms. Dalton, are you ready for that one?
They're in the folder.
Lots. We have the current ones
Mr. Chair,
in the folder
that
now.
Mr. Chair, I believe that the Senate has provided you with a list of all the ones that have been implemented. Does that list include all the ones that have been authorized but not implemented? Okay.
Senate counsel saying yes. So there was another question over here. Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Dalton, or anyone else, would it be not somewhat fair to say that they do generally terminate with the collection of whatever the amount was designated in whatever bill to be collected? They generally, I think, do terminate then, but then they may be reauthorized by the legislature, and in most cases, I think the local community through an election, right?
Ms. Dalton.
Madam Chair, Senator Senjum, that is correct. There have been several cities and counties that have come in, Cook County is the county I'm thinking of, that have come in and had reauthorizations based on new elections to extend their tax. Rochester is kind of the poster child of that, and then the other one is the St. Cloud area sales tax, which has also extended.
Senator Senjum, hence the question. We will hear from Rochester shortly. May I just ask a gratuitous question, Mr. Mayor? If you're from Fergus Falls, and many of you here are you a Fergus Fallian? What do you call someone from Fergus Falls?
Madam Chair, that's a very good question, and I guess we'll call ourselves Fergonians.
Fergonians. Not to be confused with Fargonians.
There we go.
There is someone here to testify from your community who would like to speak in opposition, and I don't have that person's name.
Madam Chair, he's sitting next to me, Daryl Sinstelin.
Thank you. Mr. Sinstelin, did I say that right? Welcome to the committee, and you're welcome to make your comments here. Very welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Daryl Sinstelin, and I'm here to testify as a businessman and employer and as a private citizen of Fergus Falls. I believe a prudent level of taxation is essential for defense, to support our commercial infrastructure, and is fundamental to our civic responsibilities to care for the needs of our children, elderly, and disabled. However, reluctant as I am on principle, I'm actually not here to oppose the sales tax option. I'm here to advocate for your approval of the local option sales tax for Fergus Falls, because considering the alternative, it's the least probability of inflicting significant damage to the economy of Fergus Falls. In 2009, a wave of newly elected Fergus Falls City Council members took office. With significant public works projects waiting in the wings, including the need to construct a new law enforcement center and the expansion of fire department infrastructure, this council announced it was first prioritizing the construction of an ice arena. While the Fergus Falls City Charter states that general obligation bonds may not be issued and sold by the city without the approval of the majority of voters, the Fergus Falls City Council circumvented this requirement by passing an ordinance authorizing a separate municipality, the Fergus Falls Port Authority, to issue the bonds and to tax the city's property owners for the repayment of those bonds. That 10% property tax increase is scheduled to be imposed on January 1st of 2012. Fergus Falls voters launched a petition drive requesting a referendum on that ordinance. It was silenced by the City Council. After public debate on the issue was silenced and the mechanism for a property tax to be levied by the Fergus Falls Port Authority was fixed in place, only then did the City Council present the local option sales tax. Political maneuvering of the City Council angered voters who felt that they were coerced into voting yes on the local option sales tax question. I hope this brings some clarity to the claim of overwhelming voter support for the local option sales tax. But here's the deal. The Fergus Falls economy is now being held hostage. The barrel of a 10% property tax increase is pressed into our backs. With the alternative of a local option sales tax to shackle our ankles. If you approve the local option sales tax, it will shackle our economy. But if you don't approve the local option sales tax, the bullet of an oppressive property tax may cripple our economy and our real estate market. I care deeply for the well-being of our neighbors, my neighbors who live and work in this community. And I ask you to please look past the distasteful actions of the council and the plan they made. I do actually strongly advocate for the sales and use tax. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Mayor Leland?
Madam Chair?
A response?
Mr. Sinstelin has been an advocate for a long time of no taxes, the referendum, and so on. And he has expressed that to the city council, and his opinion is respected and acknowledged.
Thank you. Representative Nornes, final comment?
I would only like to thank you for having this joint hearing today. Appreciate that very much. And I'd like to also, acknowledge the fact that these folks from Fergus Falls are a hearty group. They were on the road at 4:30 this morning to be here for this hearing. So if they're dozing off behind me, that's the only reason for it. So
the Clearwater folks are hoping they stopped in for coffee there.
They might do that on the way home, yes.
Madam Chair, may I say thank you to also Representative Nornes for his participation in this process, as well as Senator Hoffman. And again, on behalf of the Fergus Falls community, I ask that you approve our request to authorize the City of Fergus Falls to implement a 1/2-cent local option sales tax to pay for our new community arena. Thank you for your consideration, and we would be glad to answer any questions you may have.
Senator Howell.
Madam Chair, I'm just going back to when I talked about the termination of taxation. They said there was two, Wilmer and Winona, and on the sheet that we received, it says this section contains authorized taxes that are currently imposed, and Wilmer's on this list. So are we saying there's just one then, Winona?
Well, Senator Howell, it may be that they had one previously and it expired. I don't know, but we'll get the answer. We'll get the answer to that.
Madam Chair, I think my question was is that hadn't been, reinstituted or carried on. And I also wanted to point out if Winona's the only one and there's a disconnect because we don't use local option sales tax in the computation of LGA dollars, if Winona, it's interesting to point out, though, if Winona is the only one that doesn't, that has actually expired, that, and I could be wrong in my numbers here because when you make your divide things out, their per capita LGA funding per person in Winona is about $385 per person. So Winona receives about $10 million a year in LGA dollars. And so it's interesting to see that the only one expired gets heavily subsidized, even though there's a disconnect. So I think it's interesting that we look at this, and it seems a rather painful process that we're going through here because, I know Red Wing doesn't have a local option sales tax, and I know they're looking at doing that. And I see myself sitting at that chair in another year, saying, our voters approve this, because there is the sales job being done on the people of Red Wing saying, listen, you've got these visitors that are coming in that we should tax them for the services we provide. You've got these people that are living amongst the fringes of our city that are using our services and they need to be taxed. And so I see myself sitting there in a year from now, and I'm just wondering if the process, and I know this can be a discussion for later, but the process could be approved, improved. Whereas if we're just going to, and another question I'd like to have staff follow up is, how many of these do we turn down? And I know I'm new, but I want to get the answer to this. How many do we turn down? Because if this is the process we have to go through when the voters have already approved it, could it not just be that we grant this to local jurisdictions statewide, whether they want to increase it a percent or lower it a percent and pay somebody's sales tax, if that's what we want to do. But this process, to me, seems rather painful, and I know I'll get educated on it more.
Madam Chair?
So.
Well, Senator Howell, I would just say that you might want to talk to Representative Lencheski about how many have been turned down, and we will get that information for you. We are going to have a bigger conversation about that. In fact, we have a bill that will be heard tomorrow on overall local option sales taxes, and are there some parameters we might be willing to set so that folks don't have to come back to ask our permission once they've gotten a referendum. We're going to have a hearing on that bill. But I hope we'll try and have those bigger conversations in our respective committees so we can hear from the locals today, because our schedule is in jeopardy right now. So, Representative Mornes.
In closing, I would just say that the city of Fergus Falls has no intention of coming back. They'll live up to the language in that bill. It'll terminate, and there'll be at least a cooling-off period before they'd ever think of coming back here. So I could just give you that assurance.
Thank you, Representative and Senator, and all you folks from Fergus Falls. Thanks for making the trip down here today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Senate File 312 and House File 579. Senator Dames and Representative Conan from Marshall have a sales and use tax bill. The mayor of Marshall, Bob Burns, is here. Executive Director of the Marshall Area Chamber of Commerce, Cal Brink, is here. And Stan Brewers, a Marshall business owner. You are all very welcome in the committee.
No kidding.
Senator Dames, would you like to begin?
Madam Chair and Committee, thank you for allowing us to be here this morning. I am here to introduce the Senate File 312 and House File 579, and with me I have Representative Lyle Coonan, who offered the bill in the House. And also I have Bob Burns, the mayor of the city of Marshall, Cal Brink, the executive director of the chamber, and Stan Brewer, a business owner. Senate File 312 and House File 579 is a bill for an act relating to taxation, authorizing the city of Marshall to impose a local sales and use tax. And at this time, I'll turn it over to Cal Brink, the executive director of the Marshall Area Chamber, to expound upon the
Thank you. Mr. Brink, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you, Madam Chair, and also members of the committee for allowing us from Marshall to be here and present our story on 0.5% local option sales tax. Apologize to Senator Howe. I think he talked about this painful process of local option sales tax, and we're going to do it again. But first, I'd like to thank Senator Dames and also Representative Lyle Coonan for helping us in supporting our bill. And just a real quick recap, we are here seeking your approval for a 0.5% local option sales tax, which would support a couple state agency-sponsored efforts, which might be a little bit different than what you've heard in the past. Both of these are state-sponsored, and we're going to talk specifically about two projects. Another thing I'll just talk about right up front is that the sales tax would sunset or expire at the end as the debt is serviced, and then that would go away. So I won't introduce the people that are going to present. I'll let them do that as they go. I am, again, Cal Brink, the Executive Director of the Chamber of the Commerce in Marshall.
And my name is Bob Burns. I'm mayor of the city of Marshall. I've been mayor for the past 19 years. And with respect to the senator's earlier question on a previous project, I can assure the committee that as long as I'm mayor, we will not ask for an extension beyond the 15 years that this request is for. This specific request is, as Cal Brink had mentioned, is to support two state projects, the local location for the Southwest location for Minnesota Regional Amateur Sports Facility, as well as the Minnesota Emergency Response and Training Center. On your handout, you do have the Board of Directors listed for the Southwest Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, and you do see that it is a public-private partnership that has a broad support from not only the community but also for the region. The Southwest Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission is one of seven locations identified by the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. This is one of the final locations and really recognized as a need for the region for amateur sports, for the people in the region as well as those that would be going out of state to find those same venues. Kel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
The next slide just kind of shows if you compare to other state agencies, things like state parks,
don't need to spend a lot of time. The amateur sports complexes, they're very profitable and make a lot of money for not only the city but the region and the state. Four reasons that we really feel the local economic growth strategy, and I'll just briefly talk about these. First is
Mr. Brink, forgive me for interrupting, but did you have slides or handouts for the members?
Everybody should have handouts, I believe.
Thank you.
I'm not sure if you can see.
Thank you. Got it now. Thank you. Members, they should be at your desk.
The four reasons that we feel that it's very good for the region is attracting new spending, where we would host tournaments and other venues that would bring people to the region. And these are people that are not only coming from Minnesota. We're close to the border on a couple different sides, so we would attract from many other states. And surveys have been done that show that people will travel to these types of tournaments or these types of venues, and we're looking for that money. The second reason is the expanded entertainment options for the people that live locally or around the Marshall, the southwest corner of the region of the state. And thirdly, we already know just from putting feelers out that once the Amateur Sports Center is built, that there's other businesses that would like to tie into that, such as hotels, other eating establishments, retail establishments. So once we have that facility built, the economic stimulus would be really, really good for the southwest region of the state. And then also the opportunities for people that are living in the area for enhanced recreation. I'd like to take it beyond sports. It's other types of shows, other venues that all of the people that live in the southwest corner or travel to the southwest corner could find events that could take place in that type of venue. Also, you can see that there's a capital project financing. We don't need to spend a lot of time in here today. We're here specifically for the 0.5% local option sales tax, but there is a very detailed plan of where the finances come from, how the debt service would be taken care of, and that's all on the Amateur Sports Center. And Stan will tell a little bit here about the Merit Center as well.
Thank you. Mr. Brewers, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, just to introduce myself, I'm a 25-year retired fireman veteran at large, and I'm the chairperson for the Merit Center in Marshall, Minnesota. And I just want to give a real quick history of the Merit Center, and I'll get to my point of how this will all help us. In 2000, Marshall was chosen as one of eight regional Tier 2 training facilities in the state of Minnesota under the state master plan. Camp Ripley, for an example, is a Tier 1, the only one. It was awarded monies at this time to build an apparatus building, five-story training tower on 53 acres with matching funds from the city of Marshall. It consists of committee members from the 19-county area, and we work in conjunction with Minnesota West and have recently brought on a representative from the Minnesota National Guard to work with us on the campus, which would be a multi-use, multi-faceted facility. Been up here for the last couple years. In 2008, we came to the state. We were awarded $300,000, in conjunction with a $100,000 grant we got from Otto Bremer Foundation. We are in the process this year of building a wind turbine prop and an ethanol training prop, which is in where Marshall is right in the heart of that territory. In 2010, we came back. We asked for $2.14 million for a with matching funds from a proposed local sales tax to purchase land for a driving course, driving training simulator, skid pad, classrooms, offices, and we were awarded $1 million. In 2010 was also the year that the state of Minnesota was asked by the Assistant Public Safety Commissioner to finish funding the only three Tier 2 facilities in the state that were started before supporting the rest, and Marshall was one of those. The Merit Center was not just built to help provide affordable training for the public, private, industrial, and emergency training for the southwestern region of Minnesota, but also bring in people from southeastern South Dakota and northwestern Iowa from our tri-state area. I've spent the last couple of months traveling the area, and I've been fortunate enough to get letters of support from Redwood Falls and Montevideo, and then I have also spent a lot of time going to a lot of city councils the past month, and we have gotten letters of support from virtually every one of them, and it has been very unanimous. So it's very important, you see, for the dollars that we have, it's very important for us to try and get the sales tax to support this campus. The Merit Center, along with the Regional Sports Center, would appreciate your support to move forward with the proposed sales tax so we could ask the voters of Marshall for theirs. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just continuing on, if you look at the, there is a page on capital project financing for the Merrick Center as well, very detailed. It shows the debt service there and how that would be financed. Look at the next page, the sources of funding. There are a couple different things I'd like to talk about there. The one we're specifically talking about today is the 0.5% city sales tax. And unlike some of the ones you've heard, we have not taken that to public vote yet. We chose the option of seeking approval here to take it to the voters. And then we would then put our plan to take it to the voters and let them vote on both of the specific projects that we're talking about today. We have already received the hospitality piece last year, the 1.5% sales tax. We have not taken that to vote yet. We chose to take both of them to the voters at the same time.
Thank you. Representative Runbeck, Chair Runbeck has a question.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Mayor, one concern I have in passing a bill that has not been through the approval or the voter approval yet would be that if the legislature then is a kind of awarding it the go-ahead, how will you use our vote? I mean, will it be seen as a sort of state approval, which in a way it's not. I mean, it's really a proviso, you know, given what your voters think. So can you comment on that?
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative. What we're requesting and is simply the authorization. We're not asking for the endorsement. We're just asking for the authorization with the full understanding that the decision is really up to the local referendum, the local the vote of the people. So if I am understanding your question correctly, we do not view this process as something that would be used as a endorsement locally in the public education process leading up to the public vote.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. And so I'm just concerned about the promotional materials and, you know, that there not be any, I guess, you know, allusion to the fact that it might be an endorsement from the state.
I understand your concern.
I might just be able to add just a little bit to that. Even in some of our press releases, or we have local TV there too, and we've done some things on local TV. In all of the times we address it, and everybody in the city knows that we're up here seeking approval to bring it back to the voters, and that's exactly the process we intend to do is when we get back, not to say that state says we should do it and not, because there's other options that you can railroad those things through, and we chose that we don't want to do those. So I think it's already been portrayed as approval, Destiny.
Mr. Brink, did I hear you say that you're also at the same time going to bring a question about the lodging tax?
We already have approval to take that to the voters for the 1.5% lodging tax.
And you're expecting then a ballot question on both?
Maybe, Mayor, you can discuss that a little bit.
Yeah, that is correct. Last year in the legislative session, the 1.5% hospitality lodging tax was approved, and it is not a requirement that we that legislation that we take it to a vote of the public. However, we will do that because it's really a kind of tied to the total project. The 0.5% sales tax, if it is approved by the voters and authorized here, would be for the project financing. The 1.5% lodging tax will support the ongoing operational costs of both of the centers. So we are not going to implement one without the other.
And, Mr. Mayor, your bill says that it could be at a special election or a general election. I'll just state my preference would be for a general election. I'm not a big fan of the special elections that come when voters aren't really expecting them. So just my own preference. I don't speak for the committee here, but
I share your preference, and for a different reason, to reduce the cost of the holding the elections.
Good point. Senator Bach.
Well, Madam Chair, to represent Runbeck's point, I think the precedent of the tax committee has been that the legislature authorizes a referendum for a specific purpose. I just would caution members of the tax committee to go down the road, and we've always viewed referendums before the legislation comes here to be advisory in nature, advisory. And the local government unit will take the temperature of the constituency relative to public support for a project. I just would caution people about going down the road and allowing those kind of advisory referendums to create some kind of an entitlement in the community, that especially in communities that where a large portion of the tax is exported. And I wasn't here for Senator Coke's, but certainly in the case of Clearwater, a large percentage of that sales tax is exported outside of the community to people who travel that 94 corridor. If we start to go down the road of allowing people to hold referendums based on any number of uses that they want and then create some entitlement that the legislature then has to authorize this, it's going to set a whole new precedent in the number or the kind of things that we fund. I do believe, and we could ask council, the practice has been that the early referendums before the legislation is passed is simply advisory in nature, and I think historically we've required a second vote after the legislature has given the authorization. And I think that's the right practice, because oftentimes the language that comes in front of us is modified by the tax committee and the legislature, and then what finally passes into law is not what people voted on in the advisory referendum.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Coonan, do you have comments about the bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And thanks for hearing Senate File 312 and House File 579 today. I would just like to add that this is a very good regional project. You heard the testimony that there's letters of support from outside of Marshall, and I think that's important. It's, of course, is important to Marshall and Lyon County, but there are benefits for all of southwest Minnesota and will also bring people in from South Dakota and Iowa. So, again, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there other folks here to testify in support or in opposition to the Marshall proposal here this morning? Okay, then, folks, thank
Madam
you
Chair,
all.
Yes, I'd just
Senator
like to
Dames.
Make a final comment, Madam Chair and members, and that is that Lyle, Representative Coonan alluded to, this is a good regional project, and it's going to help the entire region, and I would ask the committees to support this. So thank you very much for allowing us to be here, and we appreciate it.
Thank you. And you folks may not have been here this morning when I said we will not be taking votes on this bill today. We will be taking them in the Senate tomorrow and in the House on Friday. So thank you for being here this morning. Next up, we have Senator Senjum and Representative Quam, the Rochester contingent, Senate File 632, House File 890. And they are authorizing the city to extend an existing local sales tax. Senator Howe, that would be of interest to you. And we have the Assistant City Administrator for Rochester, Gary Newman, John Wade, the President, Rochester Area Chamber of Commerce, Mark Moaning, a Citizens Against Rochester Bypass. We have John Meyer from Olmsted County, and we will also hear from Cindy Maves, who opposes the project. Senator Senjum, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairs and members. I'm going to move along quickly in deference to Senator Laurie and Representative Hilty, who are behind us, and keep my comments brief. This is a proposal to continue with authorization, of course, a sales tax that would otherwise terminate, I'm not sure exactly when, the end of the year, early part of next year, it depends on collections, but continue a sales tax for the city of Rochester for a spectrum of projects which will be talked about by others. Madam Chair and members, this is a local option sales tax program that started in, frankly, 1983 as a result of a major flood in Rochester and the building of a flood control project, which I think has saved our city several times over, as the sales tax then continued. And this is it continued for three additional reauthorizations with referendums, this now being the fifth proposal to come before you. So the sales tax in Rochester is approximately 20 years old in terms of its longevity. And I think it's probably served our community very well. It's a sales tax that's always sort of leaned or bent towards regional projects, be they having to do with the airport, higher education, both the University of Minnesota and Minsky projects, city and county highways. A portion of this project will go into the county for transportation purposes. Mayo Civic Center has been included and several others. So, again, the general bent has always been towards regional flavor, recognizing that Rochester is a regional center, and this project, and as people from outside the city work to pay for this project, there ought to be some facilities there that they're buying into that they themselves would use. So I'm just going to stop there, and who's going to be next?
Okay. Mr. Newman?
Madam Chair, members of the committees, Gary Newman, I'm the Assistant City Administrator. David covered it very well. I just wanted to mention that we went through an extensive process this summer to identify the projects that we're proposing. We had a citizens committee of 12 individuals met weekly for 14 weeks. It had extensive coverage in the media, and this bill is an outcome of that process, and from there it went on to the City Council. I think you all have our little pamphlet and our packet of letters of support. We have very broad community support for the projects in the proposal. We think it's probably the broadest community support that we've had for any of our sales tax requests. We have a lot of partnerships in there. As Senator Senjum mentioned, we're proposing to provide $17 million to Olmsted County for road projects. And we've previously provided them $16 million in past sales tax for road projects. We're proposing to provide $26 million in funding for higher education to the U of M, Rochester, RCTC, and WSU. We've previously provided $28 million for higher education facilities in Rochester. We also have partnerships with Mayo Clinic and Rochester Area Economic Development on some economic development projects. So we're trying to maximize the partnerships that can help move our community forward for the future. And we think if this passes, we think we'll have a brighter future because of it. And we think the past use of the sales taxes in Rochester have done great things, such as the flood control project, solved a serious groundwater problem, greatly improved our transportation system, and greatly improved our higher education offerings. I think those have benefited the whole area, and we look at these as long-term strategic investments.
Mr. Newman, a question. Have you had the sales tax, that same half cent, enacted continuously since 1983?
We've had the same sales tax. We had a 1% sales tax, actually, from 1983 to 1992. We've had it reauthorized twice in 1991 and in 1998. We had it extended since 1998. So we've had it both ways.
Thank you. And we have other folks from your community. Mr. Wade?
Madam Chair, my name is John Wade. I'm president of the Rochester Area Chamber of Commerce. And on behalf of our 1,300 members in the community, we offer our support for a couple of reasons. We believe that Rochester, and I'm about the last person that'll come here advocating for a tax, I can assure you, and you probably won't see that anytime soon. What I do believe is that this measured local option sales tax has been well thought out, locally developed, and proven results. We have a lot of challenges, like people from throughout the state that we've heard from today, as they grow and go forward as a state. We believe that if we get things right in our community, over the next 10 years, we will grow some 8,000 jobs. We have a higher visitor-to-resident ratio than the city of Las Vegas, Nevada. We have a lot of people that come into that city. We have, and we believe, while we've got other great healthcare organizations in the state of Minnesota, we believe that we have one of the world's premier. And in addition to not only having great healthcare, we want to have great services throughout the community. So I believe that as you look back at the uses of this tax and the fact that we go, it's measured, it's a half a cent, and we have to go back to the people who decide whether or not this continues. And my concern, representing a group of people that own about 24% of the property and pay about 40% of the property taxes, about how we can best grow that community. And we believe this is a tool that is proven, and we appreciate your support of our ability to allow this to go to our people to decide.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wade. Mr. Mooney? Are you Mr. Mooney?
My name is John Meyer, actually. Mark Manning is right back here.
Mr. Meyer, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning to Chair Ronbeck and Ortman, members of the Joint Tax Committees. John Meyer and Mark Manning were citizens and agricultural producers from rural Dodge and Olmsted counties in southeastern Minnesota. We're also members of Citizens Against Rochester's Bypass. We appreciate and thank you for the opportunity to address you here this morning. We're not here to support or oppose these bills in their entirety, but to point out the importance of the text in lines 2.4 to 2.6, which excludes the implementation of sales tax dollars to support any transportation improvements related to a rail bypass that would divert rail traffic from the city of Rochester. The vague and nondescript $47 million designation for transportation makes inclusion of this language necessary, and we support that text. Rochester's pursuit of a rail bypass has a 14-year-long history and is not supported by the Surface Transportation Board's regulatory decisions and two Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals legal decisions that directly reviewed the feasibility and needs assessment of a rail bypass around the city of Rochester. Both legal cases upheld the previous STB decisions. The STB and the court found that a rail bypass of the city of Rochester was neither reasonable nor feasible, economically or environmentally. Current promotion of the bypass is based in private special interest studies with a predetermined outcome to remove the rail from its current corridor with the use of public funding. Throughout this process, there's been an absence of objectivity and a lack of transparency. The lack of cooperation and transparency by those planning and advocating for the bypass continues. There's not a consensus of support among the local governmental agencies with the Dodge County Commissioners, Dodge County Regional Rail Authority, Dodge County Association of Townships, Olmsted County Association of Townships, as well as many individual townships and organizations within the affected counties passing resolutions opposing any relocation efforts of the current rail alignment through the city of Rochester.
Mr. Meyer,
yes.
We have your comments here. They've been handed out. You're addressing what is not included in the bill, correct? It sounds like we've already had some compromise on this, and the language is protecting your interests at this point.
We want to support that language and ensure that it remains in the bill. That's essentially our position.
I appreciate that. I haven't heard anybody advocating to take it out. Am I incorrect about that?
That language.
No. All right. So you're comfortable with the language in the bill as it is, sir?
Yes.
Good. Okay. We're aware. Now, we're trying to keep this hearing moving because we've got yet to hear from Senator Lori and his community. And we have to be done at 10 minutes after 10, folks, because the House Tax Committee has an appointment.
If I could make one quick statement then.
Yes, sir.
Inclusion of that language, and I assume it will be maintained, would also encourage the city of Rochester to genuinely, objectively consider what opportunities are more reasonably within their grasp for mitigation of any concerns they may have within the current rail alignment through the town, and to more ambitiously incorporate visionary plans for a shared freight passenger rail in the existing corridor that can more economically and efficiently connect intercity center to city center.
Thank you, sir, for your testimony this morning. And you are Ms. Maves?
I am.
Ms. Maves. And behind you, there's a gentleman standing
right behind you. My name is Max Sullivan. I'd like to also speak.
All right. Mr. Meyer, if you might take a seat in the back. And then, I'm sorry again, what was your name, sir?
Max Sullivan.
Max Sullivan. All right. Ms. Maves.
Cindy Mavis.
Mavis,
thank you. Thank you, Madam Chairman and representatives and senators for this opportunity. I'm from Rochester. I'm a lifelong citizen. I'm also the former chair of the Rochester Tea Party Patriots, representing over 700 members. We are opposed to this sales tax extension. Frankly, I'm embarrassed after watching all of the people come up here and give their wonderful programs that they want to sponsor in their communities, and then to see Rochester come up here and ask for frosting. We approved a sales tax extension, sales tax 30 years ago for something our city needed. We needed flood control. That was something we needed in our city. Now we are asking, and that has been, Senator Senjum said, over 20 years. 28 to 29 years ago we did that. And we were told then this would be a temporary sales tax. Temporary. So all these people that are asking for temporary sales tax, let's make them that. Now, we have renewed more than any city in the state. And we are not renewing for infrastructure. We are renewing for frosting. I was at the first meeting where they had the 12 people for this. Not one time at that meeting did the city instruct these 12 people to decide if we needed to extend this tax? They said, this is the amount we think we can get. Pick the projects that will be best for it. They never said, do we need it? Never. That's my first problem with this. Okay, they want to give money to higher education. The city of Rochester has already provided more funding for state of Minnesota higher education institutes than any other city in Minnesota. How much money does our city have to give? They want to give the third stage of a sports facility. We have a covered football field at a community college. We really need to spend more money on that. If we're not going to spend government money on a Viking stadium, why are we spending government money on a football stadium that already has a roof? Transportation. They want to give $10 million to do the airport, $3 million for a bus facility, and $34 million in a slush fund. A slush fund. If you look at their paperwork, it says right on there, these are programs and roads we'll fix if we get some state money and some federal money. It's a slush fund. They want to work on a 65th Street interchange with Highway 52, and our city council just voted 4-3 against hiring an engineering firm to even work on this project. Michael Wojcik from our city council said, I see a history of this kind of project failing. He compared it to the Highway 63 interchanges at 40th Street and 48th Street, saying there was no net increase in jobs or retail sales for the city, despite the $85 million price tag for this. That was funded by the 1998 extension for sales tax, and our city council member said it doesn't fund it.
Ms. Mavis, we are running out of time. If you could direct
but they got a lot of time.
Ms. Mavis, I agree. Could you direct your comments to the proposal at hand, not what's been happening in the past,
okay,
but the currently
right,
proposed
yes.
use
okay,
of the
they
funds?
Want Destination Medical Center. When they brought the paperwork forward on Destination Medical Center, it said right in there, this will create, without the rides, a Disney World of medical communities. I think that's frosting. I don't think people come to our medical community for a wonderful city. They come because we have the best doctors and the best medical treatments. They want to do a senior citizen center, which I think a lot of communities have raised funds for privately. They want to do a library. Out of the 12 people on the committee that they appointed, not one of them recommended the library. And now we want to put another floor on a beautiful library. I think technology is bringing, we don't need that much room. Lastly, the final thing is the Boys and Girls Club. I think the Boys and Girls Club is a private organization. I don't think that we should be raising a half a cent sales tax for a private organization. I like the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts. I have 3 Eagle Scouts. Why don't we give them a bunch of money? Or why don't we give the Eagles or the clubs? Okay.
Ms. Mavis, you've made your points, and I appreciate it very much. We also need to hear from Mr. Sullivan, who came from Rochester to testify. Sir?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Max Sullivan. I'm from Rochester. I'm a voter. I'm a Tea Party leader, and I'm a citizen of Rochester. And I support most of the items, well, not most, all the items that Cindy has brought forward. And to give you a little bit of background how this 12 committee works, they go there, they meet, a bunch of people walk in, they give no justification. In many cases, they don't even say how much money they want. They just says, where's the grab bag? We want in. And that kind of upsets me. Not only that, but talking about the people from the local community that helps put money into that grab bag, we need to thank them for participating in our business in Rochester, not penalize them for using our facilities, mostly business facilities. And finally, sorry, I'm a little emotional about this. Finally, I'd like to say the end of that system is the committee, they develop a list of what, I don't know how many, but they don't even determine where this money goes. It's determined by the mayor and the head of the city council. They just reach into the grab bag, pull-out money says you get some, reach, you get some, the rest of you, sorry. Why are we supporting such a system?
Thank you for your comments, sir. Representative Quam, do you have any comments?
Because of the time constraints, I think enough has been spoken on the topic, and I will have an opportunity in the House committee to expound on issues.
Thank you, Representative. Final comments from you, sir. I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
One point. That's the purpose of having the referendum. I guess we'll have that debate in the referendum. I would point out we had a referendum in 2005 where we approved higher education funding of $8 million and $32 million for transportation improvements. It was passed by a vote of 72 to 28. So we had a referendum on these topics, and we're prepared to have another one if you'll give us the authority to take it back to our voters.
Mr. Newman, there may be questions that you may want to address on the part of committee members between now and the time that members are asked to consider this. Questions about the timing of the referendum and which one should come first here, and you know the timing in terms of Election Day. You've heard some testimony in the context of the Marshall proposal that may be informative for your purposes when you work with some of these committee members. Folks, I really appreciate your coming to the Capitol today. Your comments here are very welcome and will be considered by the members of both committees. We also have today before us Senator Lori and Representative Hilty, Senate File 644 and House File 916 for the city of Cloquet. And we have the mayor of Cloquet this morning, Bruce Algren, and the city administrator, Brian Fritzinger.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Lori.
We have Senate File 644. We've got Brian Fritzinger here. One of the advantages of going last, I guess, is I think we all have a pretty good lay of the land. This is a similar proposal to many of them. And given our brief time, I will try to follow up with committee members as the day progresses, and then I guess the Senate's going to take a vote tomorrow. So I'll try to catch most of you in the interim and let City Administrator Brian Fritzinger give his view of our local sales tax option.
Madam Chair, members, Brian Fritzinger, City Administrator with the City of Cloquet. Thank you for the opportunity to testify here today. Again, as Senator Lori's indicated, it's always interesting to be last. Earlier, there was a question regarding how many of these have not been authorized in the past. I think our first attempt here with this group was in the year 2000. And we're still working towards this discussion and just the opportunity to take this to a vote in our community. Many of the members here sitting around the table have heard me in the past talk about the projects we've talked about in Cloquet. And in light of the time issue that you have, I'll try to be somewhat short with that. I think, again, as most of the communities you've heard from today, Cloquet is also a regional sort of center. We're located about 20 miles south of Duluth and serve a very wide population base that come to our community to work and use our facilities. Our ambulance service provides protection for an area 250 square miles in size, of which most of those that receive the benefit of that don't pay for that service. Libraries, parks, et cetera, as a regional basis, all used by folks from outside our community. In addition, one of the unique aspects of our community is that one-third of it lies within the Fond du Lac Tribal Indian Reservation, which results in a large percentage of our property tax base not paying any taxes to the community to support the services that we're obligated to provide them with. We do not receive cash in lieu of those services, so it is a situation that does cause us challenges, especially over the last few years. As you know, as a state, we've had difficulties, and local government aid has been continually reduced. Our annual LGA in Cloquet has been reduced about $1.2 million per year, and over the last 7 years combined is in excess of $6 million that we've lost to utilize four different activities within the community. Our hope with this half-a-cent sales tax, as we've talked in the past years, is really to deal with infrastructure and improvements that we need in the community, water, sewer, storm sewer, parks, improvements to our recreation facilities and trails for our community, and those that come into it are really the critical aspects of what we're trying to ask for in this year's bill that you have before you. So I guess in lieu of time, I would end with that and be willing to answer any questions that you would have.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a question regarding your property development that you have. Now, isn't that something that would be pay-as-you-go? Your developers would pay for that infrastructure improvements rather than the half a percent sales tax? And then before you answer, I just want to I'm glad the room's half empty because it's less nervous to speak then. But as a former mayor of the city just in the last month, I would caution at least you mayors that are here now, the current city, that we're looking at a $5 billion deficit. And as the budget, so the governor's budget proposal has a 4.5%, it's been changed now, to cut to nursing homes, the elderly, the poorest of the poor, the disabled, the sick. And yet I see cities coming here and wanting to impose a tax on entertainment facilities, niceties, parks, trails, hockey arenas. Those are all great things, but I caution you, the price of eggs, milk, gasoline, clothing, commodities, everything is going up and up. Businesses are suffering and hurting. We want a part of that money as well as small business folks. And as you continue to tax and tax, I think we're going to put ourselves in great jeopardy. You know, I sit on the Health and Human Services Finance Committee in Reform, and we're told from communities all over the state, nursing homes, that if we continue to cut the mentally ill, the developmentally disabled, the elderly, the poorest of the poor, the homeless will not be taken care of. And that all stems from the counties, which the cities participate in. And I'm surprised that all the cities, and I'm glad that Delano's not here, because I'd have to say no. I'm glad Delano's not here, my city and the rest of the cities in my county, are asking for a half a percent for a entertainment facility and parks and trails when the poor and the sick and the disabled are being told they're going to be cut because there's not enough money. I would caution all cities to be very careful before raising taxes because we, the public, the families and businesses, don't have that much more money to spend on niceties. We're lucky to be able to fill our gas tanks for $60 or our grocery bags for $100. So I caution everyone to quit the spending and be very careful as we go into a $14 trillion debt in our nation and a $5 billion debt in our state, and yet we want to spend and spend and spend for entertainment facilities. I would just caution us to quit the spending and ensure that we families have enough money just to pay for groceries and gas and clothing. And that's all I have to say.
Mayor Algren, did you have any comment?
Well, the mayor's not with us. He had to go.
Okay. Senator Howe.
Madam Chair, I'm just going to make a comment. You know, several of the witnesses today have talked about, you know, the cuts to LGA, and I just thought I'd make a comment that it appears that maybe what they're asking for is that we use as local option sales tax as an offset to LGA. Right now, it's not an offset in the formula, and I'm thinking that we should give serious consideration in taxes about that. If a city has a local option sales tax, that should be included in some sort of a formula because that does reflect the community's ability to generate revenue. And I think we should give some serious consideration to that into the LGA formula to look at that, because what I wanted to ask a few of the testifiers today, and we didn't have the time, but would they be willing to offset LGA dollars for local option sales tax? And I think you know, there is no offset now, there is no correlation, but yet we've heard it many times in the testimony today, so I'm thinking that we should consider that.
Madam Chair? Just to respond, at least from our community's perspective, when we look at the issue related to LGA and the sales tax, I think it would be safe for us to say that we would rather have the LGA. The local option sales tax would not replace anywhere near the funds that currently are received for LGA. From our perspective, it's a stopgap to help us continue to deal with some of those infrastructure issues. But as a total replacement, as some of the discussion that has taken place, it would be very difficult for us to do that and use this tool for that purpose.
Representative Hilty, did you have any comments on the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just emphasize for the committee what Mr. Fritzinger has pointed out, that the city of Cloquet is a major regional center, and for decades has been providing services not only for almost all of Carleton County, but a significant portion of St. Louis County as well, for which they derive no remuneration. And it's very difficult in the circumstances when a lot of the city's resources are being expended for communities outside the city to, in addition to that, provide for the kind of economic development that's necessary.
Very good. Were there any individuals wishing to speak either for or opposed to the bill? Okay, then we are going to adjourn. Thank you very much, folks from Cloquet. Appreciate it very much.
For senators, we are meeting tomorrow at 8:30, and we are going to meet until 11. We have numerous bills up, including corporate tax proposals. Thank you. We are adjourned.